This show is a legal advertisement, and it is intended to provide general information only. It is not intended to provide specific legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. You should not rely on general legal information instead of specific legal advice regarding your specific circumstances. Follow-up contact does not create an attorney-client relationship and does not constitute legal advice.
Ready for this, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We are injury attorneys, but this show is brought to you so you can call us and ask us any question on any legal subject. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be landlord-tenant. It could be new laws. It could be the United States Constitution. It could be legal developments in your own backyard. It could be zoning issues, divorce issues, custody issues. It doesn't matter. Even though we're injury attorneys, we're glad to do it. We've been doing this show for years. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We're here to talk law with you. This is a law talk show, not a political show. We don't do politics here. How refreshing is that? We're going to analyze and dissect legal issues, even though they're controversial issues. We just get down to the law. What does it say? What does it mean? How does it apply? How do you really, really do this? You know, one of the most interesting, fascinating areas of the law is obviously the United States Constitution. We talk about it all the time, and it sounds like a boring subject. It can be boring at times. I mean, when you go to like the Madison versus Marbury and all those kind of cases, but some of it can be very exciting and defining. And the First Amendment, obviously, the Second Amendment is a hot topic. And what the laws mean there. But the First Amendment, is pretty simple in the United States Constitution. It was written that, you know, Congress shall make no law that will abridge the freedom of speech, basically. What does that mean? Abridge the freedom of speech. What does that mean? How has that been interpreted? And it's always interesting to note in history how the Supreme Court of the United States has defined these cases, because as everyone knows, there's an entire group of people that argue politically that you should just read the plain words of the statute or the Constitution. And then there's another group of people that argue that it should be interpreted logically. But how do you interpret it? How does one interpret it? How does it get applied in everyday life? So that becomes the fascinating part of the law. But we're going to talk a little bit about the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law that will abridge the freedom of speech. So we always say in this country, well, we've got the freedom of speech. That's the First Amendment. I got my First Amendment rights. But what does all that mean? And, you know, so let's break it down to the very, two basic categories, right? One category is called content regulation. You know, suppose a town, suppose a city, suppose a state passes a law that tries to regulate the content of the free speech, right? Then there's another one that's called content neutral. So hang on to those two concepts. Whether a city, a state, a county, a municipality, a government can regulate content neutrality, or can they regulate content, meaning what is said. Let's talk about a sign. What's said on the sign? That's the content. Content neutrality would be regulating where, when, and how you can put the sign up, use the sign. See, you know, people want to like protest downtown Denver. Well, they maybe say, well, you can only protest over here in this area. So that's kind of content neutrality. You can only put your signs and protest here or there. And so that's how the system works. When you break down the First Amendment to content regulation and content neutrality, then you start on the legal path of understanding what it really means that Congress can make no law to abridge the freedom of speech. Then you get down to some very, very interesting questions, which we're going to try. If we have time, we're going to try to cover them today. But join us live right now on KHOW is Robert. Good morning, Robert.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, this has always concerned me a bit. It's not political. It's just a general. Why does the Supreme Court have the ability to say we're not going to hear that at a time or refuse to hear it? That's sort of a strong language. They could say, well, we're not going to hear it at this time or something. But to refuse to hear it seems like they're blocking the very system they're part of.
That's a great question. So, you know, try to break it down to its components. Incredible question, really. So when somebody does a trial, sue somebody to have a trial in the lower court, that's called the district court, the trial court. So it's decided one way or the other. Person A wins, person X loses. And so somebody appeals. So the first appeal to the first level is an automatic right. Doesn't matter if it's a state court, goes to the state court of appeals, or if you're in federal court in downtown Denver or anywhere, and you can appeal it to the first level of a court of appeals, and they have to accept, and they do accept the appeal, okay? So everybody has a right to appeal. But pretty much that's where it stops, with a couple of three exceptions. But you're asking me about the United States Supreme Court. So, let's take a case. You go to federal court in Denver, you have a trial in front of a trial judge. Person A wins, person X loses. Somebody appeals to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver. If it were in Florida, it'd be a different circuit court of appeals. If it'd be in San Francisco, it'd be the Ninth Circuit. So they appeal to the Circuit Court of Appeals, which is automatic, and they have to take the appeal. They can't say, no, we're not going to listen to this appeal, right?
Go on.
Okay. All right, so then from there, either person A wins or loses the appeal, and somebody wants to appeal to the United States Supreme Court, that's the next level. And that's where they have the discretion. You have to file a writ requesting permission for the United States Supreme Court to accept it. They do have the power to say we're not going to. So that's not an automatic appeal. That's written into the law. That's the way it is. And think about it as a common sense matter. You know, I've never looked at the statistics, but they have thousands and thousands and thousands of requests all over. Maybe there's a First Amendment request in Florida. Maybe there's a violation of a statute and a Fifth Amendment right in Arizona. There are thousands of requests. I think they only hear and agree to hear about 1% of the requests.
You know, is that because it's not enough socially sweeping or something like that?
Well, I mean, they do decide what it's going to do. But and Bob Leonard here of our law firm, Bell & Pollock, is here as well.
You know, they get about 10,000 petitions every year to be heard, and only about 80 cases out of the 10,000. Actually get heard by the Supreme Court in a year.
Right. I can see why they pick and choose then.
They look at things, for example, if they have to resolve a conflict of law between two branches of the government or two states, that's something they may want to hear or may not want to hear.
Then it goes against an established law that's written somewhere. Is that correct? Maybe it's some of the laws that are written are ambiguous, so when people try to straighten them out by taking them to court, it's almost that they stay ambiguous, that the law has some wiggle room to be able to decide it more accurately.
Well, look at it from the Supreme Court's point of view. So suppose you got a point of law, maybe like on a really hot topic, maybe like on abortion, okay? And let's just assume, and I don't know a case, I'm just making up an example, the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco has decided this issue this way. And let's say the Circuit Court of Appeals in Florida has decided the very same issue a different way.
Right.
The same issue. Now, that gives credence to the United States Supreme Court accepting the case to clarify, decide, because they got conflicting laws from different court of appeals. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. There are some other areas that puts it into those categories. You really, really raised a great question. Can you hang with us over the break?
Absolutely.
Robert? Because there's some other exceptions on why does and how does the United States Supreme Court accept cases. And I just told you one, and Bob Leonard just told you one, where two different court of appeals conflict, right? So you hang with us. You're listening to the Bell & Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell & Pollock. We're here for you. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. Champions of the People here for you. We'll be right back.
Say to me, let me be your man. Well, shake it up, baby, now. Shake it up, baby.
All right, here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Welcome to all of our listeners. KRDO in Colorado Springs, KRAI in Craig, Colorado, and KEZZ 94.1 FM in Steamboat Springs, and right here, 6:30 a.m. KHOW. We're glad you are with us. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. We're here to talk law with you. We're glad to do it. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Don't forget about our show today, our Champions of the People Injury Show, every Saturday, 10 to 11 on KOA, 850 a.m. That's KOA. 10 to 11 o'clock, a one-hour injury show. Today we're talking about how do you really hire an injury attorney? What do you do? Listen to the television ads? What do you do? What is important to hire an injury attorney? What do you need to know? What should you look for in the attorney? And if you have the free initial consultation with them, do you actually meet with an attorney? And if you do, because sometimes you meet with an investigator, they can't give you legal advice. And if you meet with an attorney, if they're asking you certain kinds of questions, then you've got the information you know. You know they're on the right track. And if they don't, you know they're on the wrong track. Wouldn't you like to know that? Today, 10 o'clock, 8:50 a.m., KOA. Champions of the People Injury Show. Right before the break, we were talking to Robert about the United States Supreme Court. You still with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the United States Supreme Court, how does a case get there? So if there's a conflict between two decisions of courts of appeals, federal courts of appeals, in the United States, they're going to take that to clarify the law. No guarantee they're going to take it. And, Bob, what's another one that we got that the United States Supreme Court takes cases on?
Well, sometimes the justice may have a special interest in a case and decide to choose it. It takes when a case comes into the Supreme Court, four of the justices have to agree they want to take the case on. It just doesn't go to the Supreme Court and it's right away chosen as a case. The justices actually review the case and decide as a group what case they want to hear. Also, I think the biggest one, though, is when the lower court disregards a ruling in the Supreme Court.
There is a great point right there. When the United States Supreme Court sees that they've established a precedent, what, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago? A good one would be Roe versus Wade, abortion. What if a federal court somewhere, a state court somewhere, the United States struck down, absolutely struck down without equivocation, without qualification, Roe versus Wade? So that would be a prior decision in the United States Supreme Court that's been changed by a lower court. So then that meets the criteria for them to accept that petition to hear that case, and they probably would. So how important is the issue before the Supreme Court? I'm going to give you an example. For those of you that were around during the Vietnam time period, there was a young man, very famous young man, known then as Cassius Clay, then became Muhammad Ali, was drafted to go into the United States military, and then he said he didn't want to do it. He was going to be a conscientious objector. I think he changed his religion and said he, due to religious purposes, he was not going to be conscripted into the United States military. There are all kinds of issues about that, but then the United States Supreme Court took and accepted the case. And it's fascinating to analyze that. Why? One person, one conscientious objector, one brutal war, and why did they take the case? So maybe, and I don't know the answer to this, I've thought about that over the years, even during law school, but maybe they think that that's a very, very important First Amendment, freedom of speech issue, and therefore we're going to decide it. We're going to not only decide it for then Cassius Clay, later Muhammad Ali, but we're going to decide it for everybody in that same situation, very important social issue, Vietnam War, conscientious objector, religious freedom, United States Constitution, and so therefore we go from there. Are you with me, Robert?
Yeah, I still think it's all social importance because it really involves everyone. It involves as a societal imperative, doesn't it, really? It's a societal imperative?
Yeah, but I don't think anybody can argue with that. That's a factor. But it's not just one justice at the Supreme Court says, hey, I want to take this case. They decide.
Yeah. Yeah, they saw the importance of it. That's why they took it.
Well, the importance. But everybody, you know, in America thinks their case is important, right?
Well, once again, it's still the big picture, and I think that's what they consider.
You know, Gary, in order to get to the Supreme Court, they have something called the rule of four. So four justices have to agree they want to hear the case.
Yeah, I've heard that already.
Right. So, I mean, and so that's the basic way it gets it. In lawyer talk and legal talk, is this issue important enough, socially important, legally important, that we might be accepted when a writ of cert, meaning a writ of request for permission to be heard by the United States Supreme Court, is it important enough or not? And they frankly can't hear every case. So, they're going to pick what they deem to be the most important issues, more important cases. Take another one that was hot in America, right? George Bush and Al Gore running for president, all that stuff about the election and Chads and what were the votes in Florida. And the Florida Supreme Court voted 9-0 to have a recount. And the United States Supreme Court took the case in a heartbeat, overnight, basically. Very important issue in this country. How are we going to decide who's going to be president? So that's an issue, and there was no long track on that. There was a short track on the Supreme Court's going to decide this issue. So that's another example of how important that issue was. You know, whether you agree or not doesn't matter, but look at that. Look at that. They had a huge issue in the presidency of the United States, and somebody's got to decide it. And so they took it, and we all know the result. That's another example.
There might have been packing of the ballot boxes, and I think that was the case. So they made them aware that they're being watched. So it really was important that everyone be aware of the fact that their ballot is important, and they're being watched as how the ballots were handled.
Right. So that was a fast track to the United States Supreme Court. So that gives you a flavor, or more than a flavor, the details on how it gets there. You think we answered your question, hopefully?
Yes, I do. Yes, I did, rather. Excuse me.
Okay. Robert, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Very fascinating law, right? How we operate in this country. But the First Amendment, it absolutely fascinates me. Join us live right now on Law Talk is Susan from Denver. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
What can we do for you, ma'am?
I have a question. My aunt passed away July 2018. Very small estate, very uncomplicated, but it has dragged on until now. And I received a letter yesterday from the personal representative to fill out a W-9 form. Why? I don't understand why I would have to do that. So I don't understand why they're asking me to do that.
Okay. All right, well, at least somebody probated the will, because you've got a PR appointed, a personal representative. You have to be appointed by the court, by the probate court, so that happened. You said it was a small estate. And so do you have any knowledge about any distribution of assets or income-producing assets?
Everything was taken care of last December.
Yes, ma'am.
The assets, like the final count or whatever, I believe is $150,000. There are several beneficiaries, of which I am one. The will, I'm not real sure how all this works, but the will, she didn't have to have a lawyer. I guess there are some things on probate you have to have a lawyer for, but she could make all the decisions without adjudication from the court and all this. That's what the will says.
Okay.
And I do have a copy of the will, so if there's anything else I can answer, I can try to answer for you.
All right. Well, it sounds like somebody put, rightfully so, an informal probate procedure, because if there's not many assets, you don't want a formal probate procedure because it just costs money, and usually the attorneys are the only ones to win, which isn't right. So, sounds like you got an informal probate procedure, and they're asking you for a W-9, so to me, there's got to be some kind of reportable, taxable event somebody's concerned about, and they want your W-9 so they have the tax information. I don't know if there's any income-producing assets. For example, if somebody inherited an apartment complex, that would be an income-producing asset, and that might be a relevant inquiry into a W-9. So who is the personal representative, Susan?
It's her cousin is the personal representative, and she is elderly, so she needed guidance, and that's the only reason she got a lawyer. And the only producing income asset that I know of is she had a house that they sold, which closed in February of this year. The house was only worth $45,000. Everything else, I mean, she didn't have much.
Okay, well, legally speaking, when she passed away, then the property was vested in whoever heirs were under the will, okay? So that event happened. And then if the house was then later sold, since it was vested at the time of the passing of the death, then it might be a taxable event, right? And when the house was sold, therefore you inherited a piece of property. It was then sold, so that's a taxable event. So that very well, in my opinion, can be what you're looking at. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think, W-9 is going to give the person that's filing the final tax returns the information they need to properly file their taxes. So I think it's probably required to give a W-9 to someone filling out the last tax return for the deceased individual.
But, Susan, we got a break coming up. I got a couple more points to talk to you about. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Okay, I'll be glad to talk to you right after the break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. This is the only show of its kind, I promise you. We've been on the air for years. We're glad to help you. We are injury attorneys, but even though we're injury attorneys in our day lives, right here on the radio, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. We have 6 books there. You can download any of them for free. They're very informative. If you want a hard copy, all you have to do is call the studio right here or call our law firm. It's that easy. Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Good morning. Here we go. Grab your legal coffee and your legal bagel, right? Why? Because we're going to talk to Eric from Catlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. What's cooking over there?
Well, we'll start with that breakfast special. I talked about it last week. We're calling it our chicken breakfast biscuit. We're doing a deep-fried chicken breast. We're going to put that on a big Texas-style biscuit with some shredded cabbage, tomato, cheddar cheese, a fried egg, and some bacon, of course, on that to make it the breakfast. We're going to smother that in gravy. We've been selling a bunch of them all week. We're going to run it one more week so you can get that all the way till next Saturday. That is the breakfast special. Come and check that out. And we're trying something new for lunch. Our lunch special is going to be a burger. We're using an Angus Chuck burger. We're going to load that up with goat cheese, arugula, some caramelized onions, some jalapenos, and we've actually made a strawberry jalapeno jam. I know what you're thinking, but you put it on there. You got a little sweet, a little sour. You got the arugula on there. Of course, you can get our homemade chips or our waffle cup fries on that. That's really, really good. That's really something to come and try. That will be the lunch special all the way till next week. And guys, don't forget, every Monday and Friday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., we do that early bird special. That is a 2-egg plate with hash browns, ham, bacon, or sausage, your choice of toast, tortilla, or pancakes on the side. I always talk about those buttermilk pancakes. Come on down and check that out anytime you want from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. That's only $6.99. We got crafts and mimosas for $13.50. We got flat screens. We got umbrellas. We got the patio. We got everything and a tons of other scratch-made products on that menu to come check out. So please come down and see us, guys.
Eric, I was just thinking, maybe you should have a plate called a First Amendment burger.
Okay.
Okay. And this week I'll work on what the content of the First Amendment burger should be, because we're talking about content regulation. Where are you located?
Absolutely. You know what? I would love it. I love it. Please do. Please keep me posted.
All right. Where are you located?
Guys, that's going to be 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That's in the newly renovated and finally finished Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, it looks amazing. We're amazing outside. We're amazing inside. Come on down and check it out. I guarantee you'll love it, everybody, by the way.
Rock and roll. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our Champions of the People Injury Show today, every Saturday at 10 o'clock, 10 to 11 on KOA. Do you really know how to hire an injury attorney? How do you clear through all the smoke of these television commercials and come see me and we're the best and you know that and all this stuff? What really counts when you hire an injury attorney? You want to know? We've done a three-part series. You know, you listen to our Champions of the People injury show today. What's important when you're talking to an attorney on the first initial consultation, even if you get the chance to meet with an attorney, at Bell and Pollock, you meet with a licensed attorney, but if you're talking to an attorney, what questions they ask you gives you the key, gives you the clues you need to know right there. So you can listen to our show today, 10 to 11, every Saturday, KOA, Champions of the People Injury Show. All that information is for you. And don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show, Barry and Larry. You know, you hear all kinds of doom and gloom in this country. We're going to go into a recession. We had a recession. We got a long bull run. We've had an extended bull market. You know, when is the stock market going to crash? Is it going to crash? Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? Well, what about all that as it relates to real estate and real estate values? And how does that deal with, and I know Barry and Larry have their opinions on this, and I know that they're very experienced, so you can get that information from them. The Consumer Real Estate Show that follows our show. All right, join us live again is Susan. Susan, you still with us?
Yes.
Okay, Susan had a will question, a small probate, a small estate matter. She got a W-9 in the mail. She wants to know what it's about. And so there must be some kind of income-producing event or taxable event that happened, Susan. But you said the PR, the personal representative, is rather elderly, I believe you said earlier?
Yes.
All right, and what's your relationship with this person? Is it good blood, bad blood? What is it? Friendly, unfriendly?
Well, I always thought we were friendly, but once she hired this second lawyer, she had one that I guess wasn't giving her guidance. She hired a new one. She doesn't speak to me.
So, okay, she doesn't speak to you. Does the attorney speak to you?
No. I haven't spoken to anyone.
Okay. Have you tried? Have you tried and called or written or emailed or something?
I just got the letter yesterday, so there was a number for the attorney on there, so I was going to try to call Monday, but I kind of wanted some, you know, I wanted to know where I stood before I actually talked to him.
Very, very smart. Okay, so I tell you what we're going to do. I'd like to get a copy of that letter, okay, in the W-9 form. We will help you. If you want us to, we'll call the attorney for you. All right?
That would be great.
So, Gary, it looks like the W-9 is probably required because she had some income coming from the estate. It could be from a savings account, CD, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, a rental property. And there's a special form 1041 that has to be filed with the end of when the estate is closed. It shows income that the estate made. So
it looks like
stream from this.
Yeah, it looks like they're in the process of closing the estate, and they've got to make certain accountings. But we'll be glad to help you and take that burden off of you. So you're going to have to get us the form, but I'm going to put you on hold here in a minute. You're going to give Kevin your phone number and information and contact info, okay?
Okay.
We're going to call you on Monday, and then we'll call the attorney for you.
Wonderful. That would be great. Thank you so much.
Not a problem, and we'll see if we take that burden off of you, and then we can cut through the smoke and get you some answers and hopefully give you a comfort zone so you can have peace in your life.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So I'm going to put you on hold, okay, Susan?
Okay.
Ma'am, thank you for calling our show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, we're here for you. Telephone number 303-713-8255. There's a line open, 303-713-8255. We were talking about the First Amendment. Let's go back and revisit that issue. Suppose you're sitting on a city council. You want to pass an ordinance. Suppose you're in the state legislature of Colorado, Nebraska, New York, Maine, Delaware. You want to pass a statute that regulates free speech. So, the Supreme Court line of cases has basically been, it's pretty easy for all these government municipalities to pass statutes, ordinances to regulate what they call content neutrality. Meaning, if you're going to have a sign or a protest or you're going to open your mouth and exercise your right of free speech, then we, the municipality or state, can probably regulate where you're going to do that, how you're going to do that, the place you're going to do that. An extreme example would be if you want to protest. I mean, do you think you could go down Denver and protest and stand right in the middle of Stout Street, right in the middle of the intersection? You think you could do that? Interfere with traffic? So that's a good example, extreme example, but it's a good example of content neutrality, the place where you can protest, the place and method by which you can protest or air or engage free speech. So the Supreme Court usually doesn't get involved in that. That's not such an important issue as we were talking earlier. What is an important issue? Content regulation, right? Meaning what's on the sign, what's on the speech, what's included in the speech. That's content regulation, not content neutrality. Content regulation. So Bob, we've had a recent case up in Fraser, Colorado, about some people that put a bunch of signs in their yard, and they're all political signs, obviously. And one side loves it, and the other side doesn't love it. And so the question was, we got all these signs, and we don't like the content, and you, or the town of Fraser, said you're violating our ordinance. Think about that. Could be a state statute, but here, town ordinance, you're violating an ordinance. And so basically, there's a lawsuit now over that.
Yeah, Gary, the ACLU sued the Fraser because they were not allowing people to put up signs. They were protesting Trump regulations and regulations that were dealing with the destruction of the environment. Here in Colorado, we have the beautiful mountains and the lakes. And, I mean, we are very conscious about our environment. And these people are protesting, but putting up signs that they were concerned of what the federal government is doing in terms of destruction of the our land.
Okay, so you know, there's one political side of that, and there's another political side. But they were arguing what you can put on the signs, content regulation. That's the point I'm trying to make. And then if it gets to the Supreme Court, and now here's a case, here's an example that the ACLU has sued in federal district court, right? That's the trial court. That's the lower court. That's the starting point. Whoever wins or loses, somebody might appeal to the next. That would be the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. And then they might request to go to the United States Supreme Court. But if it does, there's a rule of law. How does this rule of law come about over the years? So it's going to be strict scrutiny. Those are the important words. When you're talking about content regulation, the United States Supreme Court is going to engage in strict scrutiny of what the words were said, what the message was, and there are certain kinds of speech that are absolutely prohibited.
You know, they required that then they obtain a permit to put up a sign. And the sign imposes, you know, here, the important words, drastic and justifiable limits on the residents' right to express their views with messages posted on their own property.
And any person, any lawyer can say, what does that mean, right? So we got a little bit more to cover, but that becomes a fascinating process of content regulation, because then the city of Fraser said, we've got an ordinance, you can't do that. And they say, your ordinance is vague, it's ambiguous. Besides, it regulates the content of our signs in an impermissible way. It violates the First Amendment to the Constitution, your town of Fraser ordinance, and therefore we're going to go, and here we go. Everybody gets on their horses and rides off into the legal night. Bell and Pollock. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. This is the only show of its kind. You can call us at 303-713-8255, and guess what? We will help you. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard of the law firm of Bell and Pollock. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. We're glad to talk to you. We've been talking about the First Amendment. You know, what kind of speech can you not make under the First Amendment? Everybody says, well, I got free speech. Well, one of the exceptions that you cannot use freely is obscenity. Another one is child pornography. In other words, words of inciting riot and fight. And fighting, right? And there's some other exceptions as well. It's just absolutely, absolutely fascinating how the law is and what happens. And if you want any of our books, we have 6 books. We've written them. They're on our website, championsofthepeople.com. One of the most requested books is the book called The Definitive Guideline of Colorado Car Insurance. It has narrative explanations, not in legalese, but in English language. It has sample deck sheets for you. It has sample insurance policies. We even went to the trouble to put arrows, and we point to you the language and the policy you need to understand and know about. And if you have any questions, you can just call us anytime at our law firm. We're glad to answer your questions, even if you've not been injured. You want to know about insurance policies? Call us. All right, we're going to take the calls in the order in which they've come. Right now, Andy, Colorado Springs, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
All right. What can we do for you?
So I have an employee that works for me that was involved in a car accident a couple of days ago.
All right, sir.
He's got one of those Saturn SUVs that doesn't get made anymore. He's slightly injured. He claims his shoulder hurts, but he thinks it's going to go away. I told him he should come see you guys because his biggest concern is the other insurance company, because it was not his fault. A person plowed into him, which made him plow into two other cars. She got a ticket. Nobody else did. And he's really concerned that his car, which was in pristine condition, totaled out for peanuts because it's not made anymore. So according to, Blue Book, it may not be worth as much simply because of the age instead of the condition.
All right. So a couple of questions. We'll be glad to help. Was he on the job at the time of the car crash?
No. I'm not even sure if he worked that day or if he was on his way home from work. I really don't remember. It was on Thursday evening, but he was not working.
Okay, well, I got one piece of advice for him, and thank you so much for the call. He should call us really before he talks to any adjuster. Maybe he already has, maybe he hasn't, it doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter if he has, but he should talk to us, because this is what we preach all the time. They know what they're doing. They have their own scripts. They're well-trained. They have their computer screens. They have their manuals. They have their training. They've talked to doctors. They have lawyers that present seminars for them. And so for the ordinary average person involved in an accident, they don't know. And we don't want anybody taken advantage of. And by the way, on our homepage of our website, championsofthepeople.com, there's a checklist right there. It's a button, easy to find. You can hit it and download a checklist of what you need to know before you talk to the adjuster. But doesn't matter. We'll be glad to help him, because he's about to fall into an abyss of my car is worth this. It's sentimental. They don't make it anymore, and they say the Blue Book value shows $10. Have a nice day, right?
You know, Gary.
Really, the car looked brand new before this happened, and it's a 2008. But he loved that car.
You know, diminution of the value of the vehicle is one of the hardest things to work up with the insurance companies, because they don't believe it. You know, if you have a car that was, let's say, you had a brand new car, maybe you had it for a year and got in a car accident, it's not worth as much as a car that's not been in an accident.
Right.
Of course.
And it's just typical. I mean, I think I've even done a legal minute on this subject, meaning, you know, you were rear-ended or you were hit. It's not your fault. You're thinking, you know, myth. Surely it wasn't my fault. Surely some insurance company is going to take care of this. Myth. No, they're not. Surely there's going to be some help. You know, it was not my fault. I didn't get the ticket. So why am I in this? Why am I in this legal situation? So, Andy, we'll be glad to speak to him. How do we get hooked up with to help him? How do we do this?
I am going to. I've already given him your phone number. I'm going to let him know that I spoke to you guys. I told him not to speak to the adjusters. They've been, you know, ringing the phone off the hook.
Right.
Luckily, he's been working, so he hasn't answered their calls. He can't tell if he's going to be hurt for a long time or if it's just something that's going to go away, because his shoulder and his back do hurt. It was a serious accident.
And that's a typical scenario. And sometimes it goes away and sometimes it doesn't. But I'll tell you right now, I'll tell everybody right now, the most important thing I can ever tell anybody, you're injured in an accident, you think it might go away, you hope it might go away, and maybe even your doctor says, we'll give it some time, it might go away. That's all fine. What's not fine is if you don't take the proper steps right now, and it doesn't go away in 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, 9 months, and if you don't take the proper steps, then they're going to own you. So we'll be glad to talk to him. What's his first name? You don't need to give me his last name.
His name is Jackson.
Okay. All right, we're going to be looking for a call.
Yes, look for a call from him. He's going to be calling. I promise you that.
All right, we have Jackson give me a call, Gary Bell, on Monday, and I'll get him steered the right direction.
Thank you so much.
Andy, thanks for the call, man.
Have a great day.
All right, same to you. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Jeff from Aurora, how are you?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, I'm sorry you had to hold so long, but here we go.
Here we go. This should be pretty straightforward, I would think, but you guys are the experts. Just got a speeding ticket. I went from a 40 to 30. I was going 46, and a cop, you know, was hiding behind the bushes, got me on the radar at 46. So bottom line, it's a four-point ticket, and you know, what I'm trying to do is avoid pleading guilty to get it from 4 to 2 and having my insurance go up over the next 3 years, you know. So anything we could do about that? Is there driver school? Is there something that we can assist with on the legal side to kind of get that wiped off the record? This is my first speeding ticket since 1998, and I've only had one other incident, and that was going through a very questionable yellow red light in 2012. And that's it. Other than that, my record's very clean.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you. What did your driving record look like? You just told me, but you sound like the kind of driver I'd like to be driving to next down the road instead of these texting idiots that I'm scared to death of. So,
what county are you in?
Yeah, what county?
Well, it's Denver County. Denver City's where I got the ticket.
All right, tell you what. You got a shot, okay? That's all I can tell you. And what you're going to do is you're going to contact them. You're going to have your driving record in tow, in hand, right?
Okay.
And you're going to go down there and appear, and you're going to show them your driving record. And I got some other advice for you, but we're up against the wall on time here. So I tell you what, Jeff, can you give Kevin your information? I'll give you a call on Monday, and I'll walk you through it.
That'd be great. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but give Kevin your information. We'll call you and see if we can give you some help. I'm going to put you on hold, all right? Thanks for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Bob Leonard. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Think about that. Why do we call it championsofthepeople.com? We've been championing people's causes and claims and injury claims for over 35 years. Eventually, right? Eventually, we get it down. We can help you. Website, championsofthepeople.com, for a reason. See you next week.